and you left us hanging off candle cliffs, relishing the barren winter, a last chapter exquisitely hushed, smothering flame. Picking the harvest, yes, you have nourished us with lingering laughter, that old pumpkin car with fiddler on the roof hat. It was the thousands of stories sitting by bedside lockets, forgotten picture frames, old tainted war scars, tattoos, drunken barroom scuffles, which nobody remembered what the fight was about. Came the winter suddenly, never knew that you could actually grow old, because every morning you reminded us about life, shuffling through that old fucking shed. Wisdom worn, unsettled sleeves, dead box, driftwood treasures, stones, spoons, five children, five wandering meteors, loosely locked in a tiny universe, with your mouth mumbling into the sheets of newspapers, roof beam rumblings of dumb prayers. And you touched sprouting spring, sultry seeds of tiny embers, carrying your voice. And we grew opening tablets of dovetail hinges, lifting frontier horizon upon our shoulders, whispering freedom, billowing with suspended silhouettes.
And you have stumbled across Soul Asylum, and we are delving in a moment with Cal, who you just heard, A.P. Taylor, that is currently speaking, and Osama, who is now being introduced. Hello, Osama.
Hello. Osama from Cairo. You know, someone said, one of the poets remarked when he heard our program, the Australia, Melbourne, you're in Melbourne? Are you in Melbourne?
I am.
Yeah, so he said the Melbourne-Cairo connection.
Yes.
I thought it's interesting. It could be a title of a movie.
it could be. I mean, I've you know, of course, we had the Cal being the sort of Germanic American,
Yes, exactly.
So,
you know,
I think,
about Cal, the poem we heard is really, really amazing. You know, I really, every time he surprises me, his choice of words and the way he can express himself, you know, without just being so blunt, but he says what he feels, you know, in a metaphorical way and abstract way, which I really, really like. And this poem was really, really interesting. There were a couple of stanzas. I just can't find it now. But I liked it so, so much. And thank you, Cal, for sharing it with us. And I really hope he can join us even later.
I hope so too, Osama. I mean, I think you know, we've been together now as a sort of group of three for a number of years, and it's wonderful when the three of us
we're
very different poets, and we're driven by different things, but it seems to work when we're all together, because we are different from different places.
Yes.
Obviously, yourself from Egypt, myself from Australia.
We understand each other. We have this connection, really, and it's been like 4 years now we're together. So we are even inspired by each other, even if each one, like, for example, you are the master of forms. He's the master of the abstract poetry. I'm a three-verse writer. But still, we can inspire each other and enjoy each other's company, poetry. And actually, you and Cal are among my favorite poets in the world. So, yeah, here you go.
Oh, there you go.
Anyway, tonight, we, you know, every show we have a lot of celebrations, actually. But tonight we have two events to celebrate. The first one is the holy month of Ramadan. You know that more than 2 billion Muslims worldwide are now celebrating the month of Ramadan. By the way, it doesn't have to be in April. But what happens is the day changes every year according to the Islamic lunar calendar. So it's different from the Western lunar calendar. So every year it could be in a different month, you know. And but yes. It is in the Islamic calendar, it's Ramadan. This is the month of Ramadan, all right? But it could come any time of the year in the Western calendar, usually 11 days earlier every year. So sometimes you have Ramadan in summer, winter, spring, or autumn. So strange enough, last week it was very cold in Egypt and winter. And the second day, it's really hot, so we have a heat wave, and it's really, the weather is becoming so strange. Anyway, so we are celebrating Ramadan tonight, and another very important occasion is the National Poetry Month. This is every April.
Yes.
All right? This is a fixed date, every April. Yeah, so, and we have, really, we have some, strange enough, when I just start to work on the reading list and choose the poems, and it turns out that most of the poems I choose are gold-winning poems. I don't know how this happens, but maybe because I choose the best, actually. It's I have good taste. I give it to my... yeah. So anyway, so we have wonderful, wonderful reading list, all of it golden poems. Yes. And I would like to start with mine, which is about Ramadan, and it explains really what is Ramadan all about, and it's called Taqwa. Taqwa means piousness, okay? So here we go.
Well, let me put that up on the
okay,
board.
You so can put it first? Okay, all right.
So I should say, because we sort of got straight into the show, but if you do want to follow these poems, you go to allpoetry.com and you knock on the door of a group called Soul Asylum, and you'll find Osama at the door. She will let you in, and you can actually follow along with the poems and the words. So I've now got it up on the board, Osama.
Okay. So it's called Taqwa, piousness.
Taqwa.
Of the five pillars of Islam, Ramadan is cherished deeply by Muslims all over the world. A month of fasting, prayers, sacrifice, and reflection, remaining conscientious of our thoughts and actions, remembering the daily suffering of those who are less fortunate. Believers abstain from food, drinks, and worldly engagement, striving to purify the body and soul, increase their taqwa. This purification harmonizes the inner and outer senses of a worshipper, paving the way for calm and serenity, leaving behind the sins of the past. A great opportunity to reconnect with God Almighty in submission, sincere faith and devotion, seeking spiritual strength, observing Laylatul Qadr, a night better than a thousand months. End of poem. I think this is, you know, it gives, and I wrote it because someone a couple of years ago asked me to explain what is Ramadan all about.
Yes.
So in this poem, I just try to do my best. So I hope...
that a summer. I mean, it's the nice thing about this poem, because I think we read it last year for Ramadan
We read it last year in Ramadan, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the nice thing about it is that you can pick this poem up and you can, and knowing nothing about Ramadan, and you can actually, as somebody who wants to understand what's going on, you can actually make sense of it. And that's
exactly.
Nice, you know,
That was my intention when I wrote it. I wasn't glorifying anything or just, trying to explain what is Ramadan all about and what it is to us as Muslims and what we do in it.
Yes.
Because every word I wrote here is true, you know. So, we fast.
Yes.
And we pray more prayers into the night. For example, in Christmas, there is a night mass, right? Which is only in Christmas Eve. And this is in Ramadan. Every night in Ramadan, we pray 5 times a day. But in Ramadan, we have extra prayers after the last one into the night. Okay? So
yes.
We can pray it on our own, or our people can pray it in the mosque. But it's a beautiful tradition because it's extra prayers and it's voluntarily. So you're just doing it really with your heart in a spiritual way to come closer to the Creator, to give thanks and. So it's a very special month, and Laylatul Qadr is a very special night because we believe that this is the night Gabriel came down to Muhammad alayhi salatu wassalam and started teaching him the Quran. So this night for us is the most important night in Ramadan, and it's in the last 10 days. It's not exactly verified which night in the last 10 days of Ramadan. It could be any, but it has to be one of these nights. But we don't know which one. But some people, they just spiritually feel it or see a vision or something like that, and so we observe it, and it has certain signs, and so anyway, it's a part of of our belief, and it's like in Quran, God says that this night literally is a night better than 1,000 months. Laylatu khayrun min alf shahr. So the whole Ramadan is a beautiful occasion for us Muslims to focus on prayers, to focus on fasting, to focus on good things that are very spiritual and meaningful, and also charity. Charity is one of the main things that we focus on. Since before Ramadan, we start giving out, money, food, in big amounts, not we do that through the year, but before Ramadan and in Ramadan especially, there is a lot of charity going on, especially food. Because, there are a lot of poor people who cannot, and, things are becoming so expensive, AP, that people are really suffering. And it's a great month. So this is about Ramadan. And our second poem is also about Ramadan.
I have to stop you because we have a caller. And
you, great.
Hello.
Great. I hope it's
and welcome. 202 to the show. How are you?
Hi, everyone. This is Murphy.
Hello,
Murphy.
Hello. Yeah, we were saying we hope you can call tonight. We missed you, Murphy.
Yeah, I miss you guys too.
Actually, I've had
a little bit of. I was actually exercising recently, and I was on this trail, and I had a bad fall. I was looking at my phone, and I went down. I swear, I don't go down gracefully. I went down pretty hard, and But I'm fine. I'm fine. But I'm just saying.
Oh, good.
It happened a couple of weekends ago, but my ribs are still kind of sore. I think I pulled some muscles in my back.
Oh my God! Have you seen a doctor?
Yeah,
have you been to the hospital?
No, I stay away from those places. If I can.
Good idea.
When I fall like that, you should have an X-ray if it's really
That is good advice. But I did do my own self-check of my ribs, and those all look good to me. So I felt like I was okay.
With things like that, you have to be very careful.
Yeah, my new exercise policy is to just stay inside and eat snacks. So I think that's going to be so much better for me.
You're going to grow fat.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if you heard my poem about Ramadan and what I was saying about we are in Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan. Have you heard it?
Yes, actually, I remembered it, I had read it earlier, and even last year I read it. Great poem. I like how you explain everything. And I also like with religious observance, the kind of like that sense of belonging you have with people you share the faith with. And, it just seems like a special time, especially when you think of a whole month of observance.
Yes.
Right?
That's
pretty amazing.
Imagine that 2 billion Muslims are celebrating at the same time, mostly fasting at the same time, because sometimes, when you're in a different country, it differs an hour or a couple of hours the morning from night. But millions of people are fasting with you, are praying at the same time you're praying, are doing the same things. So it's not only an individual occasion. It's like something that, brings all the Muslims in the world together. It's a very special month for us, like, for example, Christmas and for, for you and. And by the way, we celebrate Christmas as well in Egypt, especially. Anyway, when I was a teenager, when Christmas was, where are we going to go? This Christmas and things like that, it's part of our culture as well.
Yes.
Anyway.
For me, the only fasting requirement I ever remember is my father wouldn't let us eat meat on Fridays. But other than that, we didn't have too much of a sacrifice.
Okay. actually, it's very healthy. The fasting is very healthy if you don't overdo it when you break your fast, because this is one of the, the sins of the Arabs or Muslims anyway, especially Arabs and Egyptians. You stay, the women stay in the kitchen all day long making the best dishes and the sweets and everything. So sometimes I call it, this is not the month of fasting, this is the month of eating for us. For example, my brother, had a family gathering yesterday. He has a beautiful garden, and it was an open buffet, and it was like a wedding, Everything you would imagine is there. So what is this all about, guys? Anyway, but, it's a part of the celebrations and the happiness of family gatherings. But for me, I stick to a strict diet, I just break my fast, drink something, go to pray, and then come back, eat a little bit, and then go back to pray, because I pray through the night. So I just, I like it this way. And you know what? It's very helpful. I have, I developed 2 years ago diabetes 2. So it's very helpful. The fasting for the diabetes, I've hardly taken any medication because the level of sugar is normal now, So it's amazing. It's amazing. Anyway, so fasting is good anyway. Anyway, we have another poem about Ramadan by Abdullah ibn Ali, and he's an American Muslim. And AP will read it for us.
But before I do that, Isamra, I just wanted to say last year when I was doing all my research for Ramadan, this program, I was looking up Ramadan and the whole festival on the internet. And all of a sudden, all of my ads from Google were about donating animals to the poor, you know. So,
yes.
So for the like 2 weeks. But that was all of, that was all the ads I got, because clearly the Google worked out that I was, you know, involved in Ramadan, and that, that meant that I was, you know, I had to actually do my, you know, had to actually give.
Okay. We donate food, by as I told you, and especially meat is very expensive, so we buy sheep and we buy cows and just distribute the meat to the families, but mostly as well we make special boxes. It's called Ramadan boxes with all sorts of rice, sugar, macaroni, oil, whatever, you know, a lot of sugar, lentil, a lot of, you know, this box of Ramadan, it's like an ammunition for people who cannot buy these things. So we make like millions of boxes and we distribute it. And people really become very happy because it saves them a lot of money buying these things.
Yes.
And they are fasting and they have big families. So food, especially donating food, it's a tradition in Ramadan, and it's very helpful. Very helpful for people.
So there you go. So with all of that as background, I am now looking at Abtali Ibn Ali's poem Ramadan's Mubarak, and it goes a little bit like this. Ramadan's caravan came from afar, moving into our homestead's line. As I peek out through screened windows ajar, knowing it has come, and I do feel fine. Alhamdulillah cleanses souls, burning away sins after fasting gifts. Since Satan is chained outside men's controls, as the God's compassions our sins lifts. Blessings to all neighbours upon all sides, Christians, Muslims, Jews or whatever. Peace is for everyone who resides, as local acquaintances forever. Let us sit together and break warm bread, and recite the good scriptures daily read in poem.
Yes, I really love this poem. I liked it very much because it's true, you know, something. We have a lot of Christians in Egypt, Coptic, who are really the original citizens of Egypt, you know, the Coptics. So Coptic, by the way, doesn't mean Christian, but we say Coptics are Christian, but Coptic means Egyptian. But they're the original citizens of Egypt. So anyway, it's true that we share our meals. I have a lot of Christian neighbors, especially in the floor where I live in. So I have two Christian neighbors. Usually we share meals in Ramadan. Some when, you know, families are very close together, Christians and Muslims. Sometimes really the Christians, they fast, you know, with us and have breakfast with us. So we always share the meals together. So, and they are so decent. They don't eat or drink on the streets during Ramadan days, non-Muslims, not in offices, work, or, you know, among families or neighbors. They don't drink or eat in front of people who are fasting. It's like out of courtesy and, you know, compassion. So this is what I like about Abdallah's poem, that he mentioned this, you know, because it's true that blessings to all neighbors upon all sides, Christian, Muslim, Jews, or whatever. It's a month of peace, of, you know, spirituality, and people share together, especially in Egypt. I know that for sure, that families, Muslims invite Christians to the breakfast, we call breakfast, because it's like it has to be in the time of when the sun goes down. We can start eating. We stop eating when the sun rises, and we break
yes.
our fast when the sun goes down, when the sun sets. So anyway, so we do share, and it's a celebration like Christmas and New Year. We all celebrated people in the Arab world, and especially in Egypt, from all the different backgrounds and religions. They celebrate Ramadan because it has its special taste, special, you know, traditions, and the streets and the things, the food and everything. So I like that very much. And Abdallah is an American Muslim, an African, actually he's from Arab origins, but he's like, he have all kinds of backgrounds, Arab, African, American. So, and he's really a wonderful, wonderful person, and very active on the site, and very warm, and, you know, he has a big heart, and he's kind to everyone. So he means what he says. Murphy, would you like to comment?
Yes, I love the first stanza. I really feel like I guess the joyful anticipation he has, you know, for Ramadan, similar to, you know, a caravan coming from afar.
Yes.
And, peeking,
yes.
peeking through the window. That was really nice. And
yeah.
Yeah, and the next two stanzas as well. You know, the first one focusing more on, you know, his religious importance of the holiday, and then after that, more of a humanistic focus and the importance of that as well.
Yes,
more
very true.
More globally, or you know, including
yeah.
everyone. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's really. I like how he ties it all in together.
Exactly.
That quote at the bottom is very interesting to me as well. It says, next time someone compliments you, thank Allah for having concealed your flaws.
Yes. Exactly.
I kind of like that, you know. Yeah, that's really an interesting
yeah.
Quote. I've never heard that one before. I like it.
Yeah. We all have flaws, actually, but it's good
right.
that, you know, we show the best of us to others. But we
right.
know exactly how we are the ones who know our flaws. I'm always grateful that people don't see my flaws. Anyway. So, you know what I liked about this poem as well, that it adds, you know, I try to explain in my poem what is Ramadan all about. He's adding another aspect of it, a wider one. So really, Ramadan Mubarak to all Muslims around the world, to everyone, Christian, Jews, and I hope that peace prevails one day in this world. But, you know, among ordinary people, there is peace, there is friendship, there is love. It's, you know, it's different for the governments and the power, people who are, you know, fighting for power in the world. AP, would you like to comment on this poem, please?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say that you're absolutely right. He's a wonderful poet and a beautiful soul. I actually posted my poem that we're going to read a little bit later last night, and he was first in to read it, Osama, and wrote me a love back that I will talk about when we get there. But in terms
yeah.
of the poem itself, the great thing about this poem is I think it really actually works with your poem together. Osama,
yes.
because
it
together, I think both poems give a really nice sense of what it is that is trying to be, you know, created and generated from this celebration. And
yes.
it's a bit different from celebrations that we have in a more sort of Western and Christian sense, because
yeah.
of the of broader aims of what's being tried to be achieved for the community and for those who are not as well off, and there's quite
yeah.
a structured way of bringing a whole community together that I think
exactly.
is quite a beautiful thing.
Yeah. This is nice. Yes, I you know, though I wrote my poem a couple of years ago, he wrote his poem 10 days ago, but as you said, they complement each other, and he's even, you know, took it to a wider perspective, which I really liked very
yeah.
much. So Ramadan Mubarak, everyone, and we can move to our next poem, which is written by white lioness. Her name is Sayeda, and she's also, I think, for sure she's from Arab origins, but she lives in America as well. And she's one, really, one of the best writers on all poetry. One of my favorite too, and she's really talented. Anyway, so I'm going to read this poem. It's called A Letter to My Ancestors. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا علي الحيدر. You know I'm made up of Arabian jasmine, of the lion's blood and bones, and lives of your sons, their pain, their glories, deepened with legends of Karbala, the whisked together in the wombs of lion-hearted mothers. Each moment is reshaping, seeking, failing, falling, concealing cracks. Generations unfurl in my soul, red ribbons of time and experience journeying to the moon and back. In the ancestral clay buried in my ribcage, that's where I am. That's where I am, the broken sum of sacred parts, chip trim touched by the tongue of universe, holy not in salvation, but in essence like breath, whole, lending my fragrance to the hands that crush, making it the only permanent tenderness, that softness, the harshness of incessant sense. End of quote. No, but there is a part in Arabic. There is a saying by Sayyidina Ali, who is the cousin of the Prophet Muhammad and his son-in-law, in Arabic. كن كالزهرة التي تعطي عطرها حتى لليد التي تسحقها. Ali ibn Abi Talib. Be like a flower that gives its fragrance even to the hand that crushed it. This is a saying. End of poem. Actually, you know, she's her style is amazing. She's very poetic, very talented. And she starts this poem with the name of God, the most merciful and compassionate. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's in the name of Allah, the most passionate and compassionate. And in Quran, every verse we started with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, and then she's calling on Sayyidina Ali, who is named Al-Haydar. And Al-Haydar means the lion, actually. I think so. Or the sword. I'm not sure, you know. Maybe it could mean both. Anyway, because sometimes the Arabic words, they could mean more than one thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, and how she is, her, you know, her Arabian background, and she's expressing. We have, you know, Karbala is a memory of one of the worst memories in the Muslim history. It's a place where the grandchildren of our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, were slaughtered by people who wanted the power, and you know, it's one of the worst memory in Islamic history. So she's mentioning it too. And the grandchildren, the grandson of Sayyidina Muhammad, are the children of Sayyidina Ali, the one she's mentioning. So the whole poem is like, it's a bit melancholic, and it's actually about the some sad history in Islamic history, some sad memories in Islamic history. And it's sort of a lamentation, actually. So I thought it's really, and it's full of layers. For me, it's very meaningful, very touching. And the way she wrote it is really very poetic and beautiful. And I don't think I can write about these incidents the way she does. For me, they're just so painful. I can't even start to think I can write about it. So she's writing about, you know, she she is proud that she has Arabian ancestors, but also she's, you know, the memories of the sad or the tragic incidents, some incidents in the Islamic history, we all carry it in our hearts, very painful for us. And she really expressed that, you know, I'm trying to explain what the poem is all about. So, yeah, she expressed that beautifully. Murphy?
Yeah, I got that as well, that she has such a connection, you know, with her ancestors. And, you know, I love the, you know, even to start the Arabian jasmine and the lion's blood and bones. And later, the ancestral clay buried in my ribcage. I mean, it really is. You can see that.
Yeah.
Her ancestry is really alive through her.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And
yes,
that is very meaningful because I think people do have varying levels of connection, you know, going back and how they feel. And I think some people really do feel that connection going back many generations, possibly.
Yeah, actually, for her it's very special, Murphy, because she comes from the line of Prophet Muhammad. You know, she comes from the line of Prophet Muhammad. So for her, this is like her family, and you see, so yeah, so it's for her. This is blood connection as well, not only a religious and spiritual connection, it's a blood connection. So for her, she's lamenting her ancestors, you know. So this is something, yeah, I needed to mention. So you get it?
Yeah. Yeah, and I also love her, the last stanza, when she talks of the permanent tenderness that softens the harshness of incessant sands. It kind of reminds me of someone who is very, you know, they're very strong with their principles, no matter what the external forces are on them. And, you know, so lending my fragrance to the hands that crush. You may be crushing me, but you're not changing me. You know, I just, I really like that.
Yes.
And I think that's really beautiful how she puts that.
You know, about Karbala, one of the really tragedies is that the grandson of the prophet, some people called upon him to come to them. He lived in Medina, in you know, in the Arabian Peninsula, and they lived in Iraq, and they called upon him to help them. They had a tyrant ruler, so he just took his family and went to them. He didn't have an army. He didn't have anything. It was him and his children and his family, actually. So he knew because it was like a premonition. It was said by his grandfather, the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, peace be upon him. He said that this is going to happen. It was a premonition. So he knew. He was going out to become a martyr, and nothing could stop him because these people called upon him. They needed his guidance, his help, you know, but he knew that, and he was brutally surrounded and slaughtered, him and all his family, except the women of the family, and just one of his nephews who stayed alive. From 70 people from the Prophet's family were slaughtered that day. It was a real tragedy because, you know, after the Prophet, there was a struggle, a power struggle with people who want, you know, to become kings and, you know, and with people who wanted to stick to the spirituality and the religion and the right and wrongs, you know, and things like that. So it's a long history and a sad one. So this is what is the poem all about, and I find it very interesting because it's very hard to write. There are books written about this history. Poetry, it's very hard to put all this in one poem. So I really appreciate it, and I love Sayeda's poetry. She's really, really a great poet. And especially when she writes sentimental and romantic poems, she's unbelievable. I just can't read her poetry. Sometimes I, you know, read her poetry. I just get so emotional about it. Anyway, Sayyid Habibti, happy Ramadan. Ramadan Mubarak. AP, would you like to comment, please?
I'm very grateful, Osama, that you spent a few minutes actually talking about what the poem was about, because you can look at the poem and you can admire the language and the skill of the use of the phrasing and how it was built, but it's almost like looking at one side of a six-sided dice.
Yes.
You know,
because
That's only one piece of probably three in terms of what the poem is about. And honestly, without you talking about it and explaining it, I wouldn't have had no idea. And so, I really liked the poem. I actually liked your explanation just as much, if that makes any sense.
It's really a deep poem, and it needs to be explained, because it's about so much, and it's about history. And for her, it's about her ancestors, too, because she comes from the line of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. She's like one of the grandchildren. So for her, she's speaking about her family, her ancestors, the tragedy they lived. And for me, as a Muslim, this is also very significant, very meaningful, and very, masterfully written poetry as well. So there is so much in this poem that, I'm even emotional about it. And so, this was wonderful, wonderful, and it's good that, I chose it, and I knew that I had to explain about it. So, happy Ramadan. Okay, we can move on. So I think we nearly finished our Ramadan celebrations, and we're going to start our Poetry Month celebration with, Sandra Lee. Sandra Lee is also one of my favorite poets, and she's American, but she's so talented. Guys, I love her. I love her as a person. I love her as a poet. We've been friends for many years now, and she's such, an elegant and, wonderful person that I love her personally, So, this poem by Sandra Lee, and she's really a great poet. Murphy will read it for us. The last thing Knight said.
Perfect.
The last thing Knight said. Sometimes I just have to write when a silver monarch drops like the Holy Ghost in the play of light on my chaplet green iris. He sets his flame on one olive speck, invoking winglets, flowering alike Queen Anne's lace around the pillowcase shade in the white of my eye. Sometimes they wash the sorrow from me with the milk of skies, offering me the luminous language from their one and only. And sometimes in this land of Amerithan dead, they honor me a seat at their table, and we eat poor man's bread there. And I see you communing with the angels. Where the stratosphere opens the nose of my dream, where sometimes the weather smells more like moth than the rain. And poem.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful poetry. And she has such a beautiful style, very elegant, really. And it's about writing as well. The poem is about inspiration. It's about writing. And her choice of words, the structure of the language, and she's absolutely amazing. And this is why I chose, and I forgot to say that Sayyida's poem was a gold winner, and this one too is a silver winner, but I think it's a golden poem. And so Sandra, she's so poetic and so elegant and so tender, and her language is, you know, she has her own style and the choice of words, the structure of her work, and it's absolutely beautiful, and I just could sit and say, you know, poetry about her poetry. So I leave you, AP, to comment.
Well, look, it's just wonderful for Sandra to be back.
Yes.
Sandra has gone through some very difficult
yes.
times and away
times.
From the site.
Yes. Yes.
And it's just wonderful to see her back, and wonderful to see her writing, and wonderful to see and read her writing so beautifully. You know, one thing to have some terrible things go on. It's another to go through the other side of that and to reflect upon that
yeah.
and to be in a different space
yeah.
and to use your words to heal. And I have
mm-hmm.
great respect to Sandra for doing that.
Yeah, and I think it's, I'm happy that this is the first poem we're celebrating Poetry Month, because it's so poetic, it's masterfully written, and I'm happy that you mentioned that we are happy that Sandra's back after a while, because she went through some hard times, and she has a beautiful love story, but, you know, we won't bring it back now anyway, maybe some other time. So, Murphy, would you like to comment on the poem?
Yes, I just love this poem. I think it's beautifully written, and just really enjoy reading it. I like how she kind of repeats, you know, sometimes in how she expresses, you know, how sometimes, you know, the sorrow is washed away, and sometimes I have to write,
yes.
sometimes. You know, I
yeah.
feel like I really relate to that with the reason why I write myself. You know, I just,
yeah.
if I have some sadness especially, writing
yeah.
helps me a lot. And it's not
yeah.
It's not a cure or anything, but it helps sometimes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
almost like even like late at night, you just feel like you can't figure anything out, and a
yeah.
good night's sleep helps, right? It kind of helps you
mm-hmm.
sort things out. And things look better in the morning, if not, although probably not perfect, right?
yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like, especially the outpouring, you know, when you write yourself to kind of, tend to your sadness, I think is something I like a lot with this.
Yes, you know, I believe writing is a therapy. You know.
Yeah,
I was always
definitely.
Involved with writing. I always loved writing, but I wrote to myself. And my husband was a professional writer. So, you know, I worked with him, and it was satisfying. And after he died, I just went into silence, you know. Things were different for me, because we shared everything. We expressed ourselves in writing, and, you know, and but when I found 6 years ago all poetry, it was like a miracle. Like I rediscovered myself. And I don't believe that, you know, I've written over 450 poems. At the beginning, it was a struggle just to express myself. Now it's much easier, you know. I'm even over-expressing myself. I'm now, you know, writing about everything in the world, you know, not only about me, about what's going on in the world, the spirituality, my beliefs, people inspired by others. So it's becoming like, at the beginning, it was a struggle just to, you know, when I wrote something, I didn't know what am I going to write next. But for me now, it's like, you know, it's easier. And it's like, it helped me so much. You won't believe me, guys, but it helped me so much. I rediscovered myself. I found my passion again. And the passion, I thought that it's no longer there, you know. So, and writing with my husband is something, and then just being myself and writing for myself it's like this is like the big Grand Prix, as they say, the French Grand Prix, the big prize for me, which something I had forgotten 6 years ago, and it was amazing to rediscover and find again and you know, become really what I always wanted to be, a writer. But I thought I was going to write novels a long time ago when I was a young girl. But finally, not even 6 years ago, I could have said that I am a poet. But really, guys, I think after 6 years, I think I can say I'm a poet. So, yeah, this is wonderful. Yeah, I hope so. I hope you approve with me.
Anyway. Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm gaining on you. I have 39 poems.
Okay, good for you. I'm sure, you know, at the beginning, and you know something, I think your beginnings and your experience reminds me of my own, because you are being inspired by others, being, you know, you are opening up. I don't know, how did you find old poetry anyway? Can you tell us that?
Actually, I did feel like I was in one of those times where I felt like writing and about something, and that was on my mind. And I actually did look up, you know, just poetry on the web. And that's the one that that seemed to me, you know, that was done for me, you know. It wasn't some kind of advanced site. Looked like it was open to everyone. And it looked pretty straightforward, you know, to get involved. And it was easy to join.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have to give them half your biography and all sorts of stuff. So I felt like that was perfect for me.
Yeah,
and
it's amazing.
Right away, it was helpful for me. I kind of wish I had done it long ago.
Yeah. You know, things happen in the right time. And, really, you are in the right place, and you're doing very well. You are, a guest host on a radio poetry show now. So, and you're writing, and you're being inspired by others, and, you know, now you have friends from all over the world, people who read your poetry. You know, I consider you really a real friend. You're a great person, and it's really wonderful experience. Really wonderful. AP, how did you? When did you start? AP, when did you join Old Poetry? You know, I know you for years, but I don't know the history. When did you start writing on Old Poetry, and how did you find Old Poetry?
Well, I started about 7 years ago, Osama, and a little bit like Murphy, I sort of had done a year or two of poems and was looking for a way to get some feedback and looking for a way to improve my writing. And it seemed I joined about two or three sites for the record, and Old Poetry sort of naturally became the one that I sort of gravitated to, because of a group of people were there, and because of the number of poets, and because of the different styles, and because of the comments that I've received, and it's the comments that you treasure, because they're the things that actually help guide you and sort of nourish you. That seemed unusual compared to the rest of the sites. So that was what sort of did it for me, and I sort of had a number of different goes at it, and I've got, you know, over 500 poems, as you know, on the site, but I've got over 500 that I've not got listed, so I've got over 1,000 poems in that time.
Wow. Yeah.
That's great.
That's so interesting. You know, I had stopped writing after my husband died for years, and when I joined Old Poetry, it was by chance. One of my relatives was writing poetry on Old Poetry, and she shared her poems with me, and I joined just to read her poems and post the last thing I wrote. It was a poem, a small poem, which is absolutely a cliche, about my husband when he died. okay? And it was years, and I just wanted to post it, like, and then, you know, things happened. And it was amazing, really. It was amazing, as if it was meant to be, as if God wanted me to find myself again and to find a motive for writing and expressing myself and, becoming the person I always wanted to be. So it's amazing.
Yeah.
And you know what, guys? I was invited to other sites of poetry after I joined Old Poetry, but I couldn't find myself. Really, Old Poetry and the way it's organized, the way we navigate the site and this community of really, I believe, the best poets and thinkers and people from all around the world, it's an amazing community. It's like a paradise for writers or something. So, and people are so kind and encouraging and helpful. You won't believe the encouragement and the help I got when I joined and started. And people even believed in me more than I believed in myself. Imagine. So, and I learned a lot, and really I was guided. People were so warm. They helped me so much. I have a couple of mentors, like I would like to mention, if now we're speaking about mentors, Joe King, you know him, AP. It was my first mentor, and then Lara Lamarca. Joe is American, but really, he's the leader of International Poetry Fellowship, and he was the first one to encourage me and publish my poetry. I didn't believe myself when I received the book with some of my poems, and we have like the International Poetry Fellowship. They publish like since then. Six poetry anthologies, and my poetry is in every one of them. And you know, just receiving the book in my bookcase, and it was like unbelievable. The first time I received the book with my poetry, I remember, I give the address of my son and daughter-in-law's office, because it's easier, better than the mail in Egypt is not really very reliable, so I give the address of the office of my son and his wife, and when they received the book, a box with the books, I asked for two editions, they called me and they just took a picture of the box and they put it in the car and they came to me. It was like, something, a miracle happening, and it was so beautiful. And this feeling, and something you never really thought of or dreamed of, or even if it was a forgotten dream or something, like it's happening, it's coming through when you least expected. For me, it was a brilliant experience and a lovely experience. And Laura as well, Laura Lamarca, she's really one of the best, teachers on Old Poetry. She's British. And she guided me a lot, and these people helped me improve my writing, and encouraged me, so I owe them a lot, and really they made a difference in my life, and I'm trying to do the same for others, because for me it changed my life, and it was very, very beautiful, spiritual, and inspiring experience. And they taught me this, and I'm trying to be like them, to encourage others, to help others, to publish for others. And I'm now published in over 30 poetry anthologies. I have people have pages for me in different sites, and the last thing, now that I'm a book editor, So it's amazing, guys, really amazing. I'm not bragging. I'm speaking about a real experience that changed my life and how meaningful it is for all of us to be part of this international experience, actually. Like Murphy is now talking to us from America. You're in Australia. I'm in Egypt. This is like a miracle, guys. Who would have thought of this? So, yeah.
Yeah. That's right. I think it's the thing about it is it's a creative space, Asama,
yes.
and there's been, you know, a lot of people that have helped me along the way and
yes.
have taken the time, the energy to do that. And like yourself, yeah. I feel a great, you know, a great passion to do that for others that are coming through now, given
yeah.
that, you know, we're sort of the older sort of generation who have been there and are looking to give back to the site what we got in the first place.
Yes, yes, yes. And you're doing that really, really, being a host of this show, really, you've put time and effort and you really care. And I appreciate that so much. And really, it was Cal's idea. And, you know, Cal created the Block Talk Radio. Cal also, you know, Soul Asylum was the first group I ever joined. And they had their impact on me. Cal, Luyo, you know, Judy, God bless her soul, and others. They were, you know, it was like also, you know, these groups, you become so closer to other poets, even, you know, it's more private and it's so warm and they bring the best out of you. They encourage you, really. And look where we are now. We have our own radio show and, you know, so this is really unbelievable. And, you know, being among people who are, you know, same-minded people, it's different from being on Facebook. I don't have an account on Facebook, by the way. It's different than being like, in an open space. So this is a close community with people who really think alike, with people who share the same feelings, emotions, humanity, even if they come from different backgrounds. Guys, this is really amazing. So we are celebrating. We are saying this in celebration of Poetry Month, actually. So it's great. Our next poem is by Kay. And Kay also is one of the best writers. She and her husband, Stephen, also are leaders of a group called A Poetic Slice of Life. And they have their own Block Talk Radio as well. And really, they put so much effort in encouraging their group members. They're so generous, so encouraging. They read every poem you post on the reading list. They're amazing, really, both of them. I love them. I respect them. And so in celebration of Poetry Month, I have two poems on the reading list, one by Kay and one by Stephen. And they are both YouTube recordings. And Kay's poem is also a gold poem. So I hope you, it's downloaded. It's
Yes, it is. So I'm going to play.
It's called Clay. Can you see? Can you just read the title, please?
So the title of Kay's poem is, and it's up on the board now, Clinking the Teaspoons Wrapped in Spicings of Mirth. And this is her recording now.
Clink in the Teaspoons, Wrapped in Spices of Mirth, by Kay. I'm blessed in ribbons to teal their mahoganies. Café à latte, henna's, the fragility of snowflake sugarins. Russian, their palette of taste. Chambers of home, kitchens its mills to meddle the pennies in thought. A brook to birch and hardwood sedin. The stone of vestige, melted in hands. Macaroons, powder in the notions of hearth. Kith and kin, lilt tapestries of embroidery, whittling a needlework of warmth, wild rose nestlings, gracing the dressing, as a tepify sifts the reeds reminders and molds of toasted, roasted endearments and bone.
Yeah. Beautiful, and it's a gold winner. And I really feel amazed that, like, words have no end. Each of us can use different words, like, you know, to express ourselves in our own style, in our own choice of language, as if words have no end, because each poem has its vocabulary, which is different from the other. And, like, you know, words are endless, really. I always say this, and I believe that words are sacred as well. And I just love her. She has also, like Sandra and like White Lioness, she's also one of the best poets on all poetry, and she has her style, and it's amazing. Very elegant, very beautiful, great choice of words, beautiful language, her own style. And this is amazing, guys. And, you know, she's speaking about moments, very special moments that we relax, you know, just, you know, drinking a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. Or since she has a hobby of, you know, needlework. And so she's speaking about moments that are warm and calming and personal. But it's so significant to her that she is expressing these moments in beautiful poetry. So it's absolutely beautiful. Murphy?
Well, yeah, I agree fully, Asama. The way she kind of makes you feel of home, and you know, that feeling you get when you're at home and with people who are you know, sharing together, no matter what it is. It could be, you know, powdered macaroons or
yes,
whatever, in the especially in the kitchen, you know. And it kind of reminds me of a slower time, even for my own self, when we had a lot of that. And I think there's still some of that, but maybe a little less so. Just as far as everything being so fast-paced in today's world. But yeah, I just love the feeling you get when you read this. That those are the things that you remember and that are so important. You know, that cup of tea with a relative, or, you know, and enjoying each other's company. And it's all in that setting of home, you know, which she really, you know, writes so beautifully with this.
Yeah, very warm, very warm. And we can all relate to these feelings and these moments. I'm sure we all have been there, especially in the kitchen, you know, sitting in a table, having coffee and things like that. Yeah, you won't believe it. But the last conversation between me and my husband, a day before he died, it was in the kitchen. He was sitting and I was fixing dinner to him. And we had, you know, a quick conversation. I don't want to go through it now because it's sad, because he was telling me that he feels he's dying, and I was so angry and upset. Anyway, so we were in the kitchen, actually. Imagine such an important conversation, and actually the last one between us, because the second day he died, or a day after, something like that. So, like, this is very meaningful, very real, very warm. And, for me, I can relate. AP?
Yeah, I hear quite a bit of Kay, because she comes on a Team of Voices, which is my other group, and this was written for a Team of Voices show on a Monday.
Yeah.
And she's always a strong supporter of that show, and she's got a beautiful way with words, and she finds a way to link words that you wouldn't otherwise imagine. You know, cafe au lait henna's, the fragility of snowflake sugar rings. Who's going to put those words together, really?
Exactly.
But they work incredibly well, and I've got absolutely no idea why, but they do. And Kay's just got a terrific sense of words and what works, and she's got style, but it's quite beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful choice of words, beautiful language, very elegant, really. And you know, the choice of words also and the style of writing, you know, gives you an idea of the personality of this person as well. So, like we say, you know the book from its title. So I always feel people, especially my friends, my fellow poets, I understand them. I understand who they are from the writings, from their word choice, from their style of writing. And this, you know, they become closer to my heart. Words are really miraculous, the way words work for us to express ourselves. And the choice of words also, like, expresses who you are and the style of writing. So she's very unique. She's very elegant. And you know something? You said that this was written for another group as well, another show. Mm-hmm. We have our show. You know, Kay has her own show also, Poetic Slice of Life, and a team of voices, Depth group, and she has a show, and we share our poetry together through these shows. So this is really beautiful, guys. Yeah, this is really amazing, beautiful. So, yeah. Very nice. In her last show, she read one of my poems as well, and I heard it. It was beautiful, and she and Stephen are really, you know, they really remind me of me and my husband. They are very connected. They understand. They have harmony between them because they're both writers. And so they have a very, very special relationship, and it appears in the way they're, you know, handling their group, their radio show, and I really respect both of them very much. They're very loyal and to each other. They are very understanding. They are very helpful. This is amazing, guys. This is beautiful. And we're going to listen now. We listen to Kay, so it's time to listen to Stephen in his poem, which is very unique as well. King Brian takes his drinking games seriously. It's humorous, but a lot of reality in it, and it's about it's inspired from Irish folklore. So this for me was very interesting. So we can listen to him. Is it ready? Okay.
Yes, it is. Let's play now, Osama.
Yeah. Okay.
King Brian Takes His Drinking Game Seriously by Stephen 76. Ancestry dated to ICC created, but crossing with household ferry. On the Emerald Isle, see their elvish smile in rings of trees on prairie. Dressed in green or red from toe to head, leather shoemaker, chosen trade. Keeper of gold for all sprites in the hold, knee-high accountants were made. Find them hiding in grass or in rocky pass, smoking by a rainbow so bright. Polished hat buckles and shamrocks on their knuckles, dashing through forest at night. As dusk comes creeping, crescent moon comes peeping up through the evergreen sky. Fall through magic cratered hill and then drink your fill with King Brian a set by your side. With drinking lark rhymes long past midnight chimes, you challenge with Mary McCluskey. Beneath curly red locks, he tilts back his crock and counters with drinking her whiskey. End poem.
It was really interesting for me. It was beautifully written. And actually, you know, I'm not very familiar with the Irish folklore, but I know that Irish people take their drinking very seriously. Yeah, it's very well known. But, you know, I learned a lot from this beautiful, beautiful, lighthearted poem, which is obviously about a character. A kind of elf or something, which is a character in the Irish folklore. I don't know, Murphy, if you know about this. What is your view about?
I like the poem a lot. As far as leprechauns, it's interesting. My mother actually did give me some Irish mythology books that I had read. I never had run across a leprechaun in any of these books.
Yeah,
so I don't
okay.
know when the leprechaun actually was created, but it's definitely an interesting character, you know, and certainly, I like the kind of the way he describes him, you know, the ancestry dated to ICC created, and just the connection to the forest and all the it almost seems like he's an indigenous Irish, but I've never met him myself, but maybe he is a character that someone conjured up, just someone who's always looking after a pot of gold, or the things that maybe you would dream to have and don't have, and things like that. So maybe there was a reason that the Irish created a leprechaun somewhere along the way.
Yeah, obviously it's a famous character, so it was interesting. So, AP, do you have any idea? You have Irish ancestors?
I don't, Osama.
Okay.
I have Scottish ancestors, English ancestors, but not Irish, unfortunately. So I'm not the best person to ask about leprechauns, but I would say that I think Stephen, actually, this poem's really interesting because it's just slightly restrained. It's got a really interesting rhyming pattern, which is a sort of classical sort of Irish sort of almost singing pattern. But the content itself is quite restrained, and it's quite beautifully written in terms of the words he uses and how he puts the it together, and so because Stephen is one person you can track from year to year, and you can actually see him growing as a writer, and this is a classic example of him showing real depth in terms of how he's gone about a subject compared to how he might have done it 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I thought it's lighthearted, and we are introduced to a new character, so, yeah. And by the way, I know that the Scotch take their drinking very seriously, too, because the most famous whiskey in the world is called Scotch, yeah. When I lived in England, I had Irish friends, and actually my granddaughter, her husband is from an Irish family, and he came and visited me. They just got married a year ago, and last summer they came and visited me. And I had Irish friends when I lived in England. They're really very nice people, very kind, very warm, really nice people. And the Scotch as well. I had, me and my husband, we had a Scotch friend. He was called David. He was the kindest, most considerate young man I ever met in my life. He was my husband's best friend. And I also had a friend, a woman, a friend, Scotch, but here in Egypt, I met her. They are really so spiritual, so emotional. So really, I love Irish people and the Scottish people. You know, the British are a bit reserved. They are not like the Irish and the Scotch. They're warm. They're very generous with their emotions. They're very kind. The British are really very subtle, and I respect them. But they're different, They're more preserved a little bit. The English people, because they're all British, English people, Irish, Scotch people. They're good. They're true friends, and they're good people, and they're very subtle. And when I worked with them, really, they're the best. They just offer the best environment of work, on the highest standard, you know, like when I worked at the BBC in the Arabic service, but still our bosses and, you know, the administration, they were British. They were really, you know, very high standard people, very well educated, you know. The work ethics was the best in the world. You know, they were really, really wonderful people, and they just trusted you, encouraged you, brought the best out of you. It was an excellent, excellent experience that made a difference. I was only 19 then, but imagine, I had my own program. So look how they trusted me and they encouraged me, they taught me. And, you know, sadly, I had to leave after a year because we had an offer, me and my husband, in the Jordanian television. So for my husband, it was a better offer because he was a director. And for him, it was better than the broadcasting. But for me, it would have been better if I stayed at the BBC because they had a contract for me and, you know, they believed in me. They were encouraging me because my program became, you know, the best, number one in the overseas broadcasting. So they really gave me so much care, so much attention, and so much space and trust that for me it was a great experience. But for my husband, it was better for us to go to the television, to Jordanian television, for him as a script writer and a director. But anyway, they all were beautiful professional experiences, some of the best, you know. BBC in the late 60s, there was television, and it wasn't so popular like it is now. There was no internet. So the BBC was number one broadcasting in the whole world. And I worked in a place called Bush House. It was such an old building, you know, historical building, and it was only for the overseas broadcast. Like, for instance, the first floor was the Arabic service, which was the most important, and then there was the other, you know, floors. There was the Italian service, a Spanish service. So it was really a very important experience, and the place was so professional, you know, one of the best in the world, broadcasting number one in all languages, and it you know, it was the Arabic service was one of the first, you know, like overseas services in the history of the BBC itself. It started in the 40s. And so it was a very, very important department. And so it was great. It was really great. Anyway, so, yeah, can move on now from memories that Stephen helped us go back to. And we have another British poet, Arcana, from the UK, with a beautiful poem. And then you read your poem, AP, and then Murphy can read his poem as well. Okay? So, yeah, we go for Arcana's poem. You can read it, AP, please. Okay.
Okie doke. Well, I will read his poem, and then I will read the poem that inspired in the same sort of poem.
Yes.
Just come.
Okay.
With me, and it goes a little bit like this. Come walk with me, my sweetheart, neath starry skies so fleeting, where romance paints such art, to share where hearts dance beating. Entwine thy hand in mine, there fill my joy with greeting, to slow the sands of time, so smiling lips chance meeting. As nightfall drips to morning, where'er the world wanders I chase, as daybreak frees the dawning of sunlight o'er your face. To thy beauty brightly calling, so lights my sight with grace, to catch the petals falling from an intimate embrace. Where flutter my fond emotions on breaths of passion breeze, to flow like glittering oceans as soothe they soul with ease. There see my eyes adore thee, whose soft embrace I crave. And here our love spoke softly, with words we both conceive. End poem.
Beautiful, beautiful. And it's also a gold-winning poem. And, you know, I discovered Arcana just a couple of months ago, and I was amazed. I loved his poetry. It's, you know, it's very close to my heart because, you know, it's feverish, but in the same time, it's classical poetry and romantic poetry. And this is like, you know, my favorite kind of poetry. It's very close to my heart, the spirituality, the romanticism, the classic style, but in free verse. And it, really, his style is amazing. For me, it's very close to my heart, and I like the style. For me, it's my favorite style. I love all forms of poetry, and I love all the everyone's style. But Arcana's poetry, it's, you know, for me, it's very special because I can relate emotionally, poetically, and I like the romanticism. And there is this touch of classical poetry as well. And so, yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful. I love it. He took us on a very romantic and sentimental walk. And thank you, Arcana, for sharing this beautiful poem with us. Murphy?
Yeah, I really like the romance, too. I really feel it. Right starting, come walk with me. You know, my sweetheart, just and you could almost, it's unwritten, but it's almost like leave your phone at home and, you know, to be just you know, separate and together like that. You know that this is our walk and we're just going to enjoy together. And and he says, and twine thy hand in mine. I really like that. It's almost like they become one, you know, in this walk.
Yes.
And in how they enjoy each other. So I think, you know, throughout the poem, I feel like that. And at the end, when he talks of flow like glittering oceans as soothes thy soul with ease, it seems like this whole walk and really just a beautiful, you know, romantic time to spend.
Very beautiful, warm, and you know, it has this classical touch, and there is rhyme in this poem. There is rhyme, but it's not forced rhyme. It's too smooth. You know, you just don't feel it. You know, and this end rhyme, I like end rhyme when it's not forced. You know, so like there is a rhyme here, but you don't feel that. You know, it's just you know, words with meaningless words just to rhyme. You know, it's just so smooth that it works with the you know, just flows beautifully and very beautiful. AP?
Yeah, no, I think it's quite inspiring, right? But it's a beautiful romantic dancing through the words and dancing through the emotions, and I thought it was a really inspiring piece.
It is. Yeah, and it inspired you to write something. Can we listen to your poem now?
I like this one, because I go romantic and I don't do it very often. This is Stardust.
Yeah, I know.
A little bit like this. May the soft touch of our lips part only when Eve becomes weighted. For your body is a canvas of art, by a pen inks a colours effaced. Distance has held us by design, like dancers on your sweet face. Our paths here as comets align, sweeping by a stardust trace. For when night journeys to day, sun streams mellow into grace. I imbibe your perfumer's way, licorice, cinnamon and mace. Chiffon, those pale daffodil rays, glide our bodies soon embrace. And from my sleeping days, on your skin, a stardust trace. Skies stray as a watery ocean struggles as worn to June's ease. grasping limbs of rays in motion, you my beach of sands decrees. Your eyes, they linger upon me, history ways of orbits in space. Storms of my past are set free through you, a stardust empire.
Beautiful, really beautiful. And you should write more of romantic poetry. This is really amazing. Really, you know, I'm stunned. I just don't know what to say. So beautiful. And is it any special form, AP? Or?
No, it's not. Although I have to admit, I have gone and used a very similar end rhyme scheme to Akana, but I haven't used the same words. But no, there's no special form to it. It's just in an AB style form, and it just sort of wanders down the page, Osama.
Yeah, but it's beautiful, really beautiful. And, you know, I like how when you're inspired by something, you just take it and make something personal out of it. You know, that's a talent. You know, I understand this because sometimes I'm inspired by someone else's poetry. But I don't use, of course, neither the same words nor the same, but meanings, but the same spirit, the same mood. And I think this is
right.
What you did. You just took the mood, the spirit of Arcana's poem, and you went your own way. Really beautiful and romantic and poetic, and the rhymes were so soft and smooth, and it was perfect. A classical romantic poem, which is beautifully, masterfully written, actually. And the first stanza is amazing and very beautiful, really. I loved it, and thank you so much. And this is a great celebration of poetry on the month of poetry. And I love the title because always stardust for me is like a metaphor of beauty, inspiration, miracles, and so many meanings. Romance, you know, stars and stardust is a metaphor of many beautiful things, and I love the title. Murphy?
Yeah, I agree. The stardust that you just feel throughout the poem, you know, it's like an evidence of the magical feeling you have, you know, in all the different ways you spend time together and enjoy each other. And I really like you know, getting lost in her scent with the perfume and the licorice, cinnamon, and mace. Of course, kissing is good. I won't talk about that too much. It's all very, very beautiful about the paths and the orbits. I really like that a lot. And just really the feeling of stardust, you know, it really goes
exactly. It's stardust. It's a metaphor for many, many beautiful things. Just, you know, when you start the title with it, it just brings to your mind so many beautiful things, miraculous things, inspiring things. And the poem goes on, you know, softly into details with elegance, you know, even the kissing. You know, sometimes I don't like very much adult poetry because, you know, sometimes they go, I don't enjoy it very much. I prefer romanticism. I prefer spirituality. And, you know, I have many poems about love and about, you know, passion and about, but I it always comes out in a romantic and spiritual way, you know. So, yeah, so this is a kind of poetry that I like. It's about, you know, love, and it's about romance, but in a very elegant way and poetic. And, yeah, this is beautiful, very beautiful, AP. Thank you so much for writing it and for sharing it with us. And beautiful, beautiful, just beautiful. So, you know, we are really having a lovely, lovely evening with great poetry. And this one is like when they say, you say the cherry on top of the cake. That's what you say, guys?
I thought you would like it, Asama. It's your type of poem, I have to say.
Yeah,
having
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. My kind of poetry, you know, the classical and the spiritual and the romantic, and so, and a point more, it's also in rhyme, beautiful rhyming, something, you know, I don't rhyme very much. When I rhyme, it comes just natural, and I can't rhyme the whole poem, you know, some internal rhymes or end line rhymes,
yes.
But I can't rhyme the way you do, you know, this scheme, rhyming scheme, which makes really the rhyming poem, you know, complete, intact. And but the way you know, so smooth, the way you wrote it, and elegant, and yeah, so I could just keep on and on. I loved it. You were right. I love it. It's beautiful. Anyway, we're going to go to our next poem with Murphy. Murphy, you know, this poem was on the reading.
Yeah,
the cover girl. It was on the reading list since last time. And I'm just trying to find where it is, guys. Okay.
It's up on board.
Okay, just a second. Here it is. I found it. Okay. Yeah. Come on, Murphy.
Okay.
We're waiting for you.
Okay. Cover girl. Your song cover all covering. Hey guys, hope you like it. Angelic voice with Jersey style. Now who is covering who? Your warm cover all covering. You've got a heart, let it beat. Truly the world's big sister, looking out for all her siblings. Grim news of your passing, our frozen YouTube technology link. A wishful reboot, reload, retry. Sadly, all we can do is ask why. Grimy news of your living, your sharing melodies and gifts of you, your touching of countless hearts, covering, inspiriting view. And boom.
Yeah, that was interesting because it is a tribute to Christina Grimmie. And there is a story behind this poem. And so I would like you to tell us about it.
Sure. So she was basically what they call a YouTuber, someone who, and she did song covers. So she has, she would pick different songs and just sing it. And actually, I think she has one of the most beautiful, you know, singing voices I've ever heard. But I might be a little bit biased because I also think her personality is quite amazing, and she has had quite a following because of that. And you know, she was someone who really, I think, had a heart of gold. And you know, she would even say, you know, she would sing her songs, but she would also connect with the viewers. One thing that I guess she just made you feel, you know, it was almost like you felt like it was interactive, like it was almost like your big sister in the room with you, and you're palling around with her and having fun. And, you know, she was just really sharing in that way. And when she did pass away, I know that there were millions worldwide, you know, not just local, but worldwide, who were, you know, really broken by that. You know, she would talk about important issues too. And, you know, for example, like bullying and people just being comfortable in their own skin, you know, really important things And for a young person, I just felt she had a lot of wisdom. And, you know, her end, you just really, you know, you're sad and angry, too, because she just didn't deserve what happened. And, you know, she had a concert in Florida. And I guess afterwards they have these, what they call meet and greets, right? The people, some fans will go and meet the singer. And she actually had her arms outstretched to give this guy a hug, and he shot her dead. And, you know, that was the end of it. She was 22 years old.
My God.
Really a shame. Yeah, so yeah. It was really very sad. And, yeah. You know, but yeah. She did make her mark. I felt like in the short time she was on this earth, she really did make her mark, and she really did positively impact, I think, millions, really. I really think she did. So.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, when I read that this poem is a tribute to Christina Grini, and I didn't know her, so I looked her on the net, and it was, I felt so sad. She was, from what you're saying, she was like a kind of influencer, and influencer, yeah? What they call it. Anyway, so it's so sad. Why do people do these things? Why would someone just kill a person because he's talented or he's beautiful, like the guy who killed John Lennon? Why?
Right.
I don't understand. Why is that? This is madness or obsession or envy? What is it exactly, Mervyn? Why would someone do something like this?
Well, I think you know, maybe she did too good a job connecting with this person, and this person certainly, I think, has some mental illness. But probably in his mind, he is connected with her forever, because what he did was kill her and then immediately kill himself. So I don't know. Maybe that was it. But it's a shame, really.
But it happened many times that a fan would go and kill his idol. This is mental illness.
Right.
It's a kind of obsession. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very sad. Very sad. And that was very nice of you to just write this tribute to her, because, you know, you shared her memory with people like me who didn't know her very well. So now I know her. And this is nice just to share her memory with others and introduce her to other people around the world. So this was really very nice of you, and I feel so sorry for her, and I don't understand these crazy people. Maybe they should search people like that, especially entering in a place like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
understand the security. You would think that
exactly.
Security.
Yeah, poor girl.
Be on top of something like that. I don't understand, really. It's crazy.
But, you know, you said something very important, that these people, they get so obsessed by this person that by taking their lives, they connect with them forever. Because now, every time we will remember Christina, we will remember her killer. Like John Lennon, we will always remember his killer. And he was a big fan. What I know is that I think he's still alive. He's in jail. Is he still alive, this person who killed John Lennon?
I think he is.
Yeah.
Alive, so.
You are so right. I never thought of it. They just take their lives and become part of their history, of these people's history forever.
Right.
It's a good, but it's still they are mentally ill. AP,
right.
Do you know about Christina, or just now?
No, the poem that was written by Murphy, and so I went back and did a bit of looking up and just understanding the story, which is it's a great way to communicate an event is to write a poem and to actually write something that means that, you know, yourself and myself have gone back and read about the person that we didn't know is a really positive thing, and you know, for me, you know, it there's something very sad about
it's very
people
sad,
that they're going to end the life of somebody who, is an entertainer, basically, and yes. was not doing yes. any harm to anybody and
anybody
and had no, mm. you know, and they end
yeah.
up losing their lives for no other purpose that they were entertaining people, and I just think that's horrible and terrible
yes.
and dreadful and
exactly.
and I should say, unfortunately, the individual who did shoot and was convicted of killing John Lennon is still alive in jail, which is sad.
Yes, he is still alive. And I think last thing I heard that he wanted parole, but I don't know if he was granted one. But he took the life of one of the most beautiful, talented,
yes.
famous human beings in the world. I mean,
right.
like,
yes.
His work is still alive in our hearts and even in new generations. And it's like he was such a good person, a talented person who really cared for others. And he was just killed for nothing. Just, this is madness,
yes.
truly. Mental illness,
yes.
for sure, and obsession and envy and many things. Yeah, so sad, so sad. And when I read about Christina, really, this is insane. A 22-year-old girl who's doing no harm to anyone. She's beautiful. She's talented. She's reaching out to others. So sad, really. Really, so I really appreciate that you brought to our attention, shared her memory with us, Murphy. This is like very important and interesting as well. So we are, we still have some time.
We
have a poem. Yeah, we have a poem by, I'll tell you now. It's by, where is it? I'm trying to find it, guys. By Cheyenne.
Cheyenne.
It's called Stoy Lo. Cheyenne? How do you pronounce it, AP?
I would go Cheyenne, but that's just me.
Yeah. Murphy, is it Cheyenne or Cian?
Where does it say Cheyenne? I don't know what language is that.
Yeah, no, her name. It's in her author note.
I would guess Cheyenne. But I would only be guessing.
Cheyenne, yes, I would say
yeah.
Cheyenne. Yeah, she's from Canada, and and she has a Salish. They call it Salish family, from a Salish family. It's like indigenous people from Canada, and I really, really love her poem because I related, because she's speaking about the people of the river, and for me. The Egyptians are also people from the river. The river is our life, the River Nile. And she's speaking about that. And her poem is called Sto Lo. This is the name of the river. So, Murphy, would you like to read it for us, please?
Sure. Sto Lo. The river we named us to. You can see centuries in cliff faces. Lines carved by eroding water, swirling eddies, beating pockets into rock. We used to fish every summer, casting nets and filling old bathtubs. My aunties in an assembly line, cutting off heads, gutting fish, prairies whole. Old cooler in the back of a pickup truck, so they'd last the long drive home. My dad cleaned them himself in the driveway and canned them in our kitchen in Alberta. The stench of salmon saturating. I haven't seen Sto Lo in ages, the birthplace of my grandparents, the river of all rivers. I'll go by myself soon, 10 years gone, to where my ancestors wove cedar roots into webs, baskets, and cups. We are river people. And poem.
Yeah, it, you know, I really fell in love with this poem because poetry can be like used for so many things, not only expressing ourselves, our feelings, our emotions, incidents that happen around us, but also it could be recording history, you know, our history. Like Sayeda's poem, she was speaking about her ancestors, and it was very meaningful. And also Cheyenne's, you know, this is what I liked. It's also a goal-winning poem. So she's speaking about the river that, you know, identifies her background. Like for me, the Nile is the spirit of Egypt, the vein of life. And the people by the river, they have special traditions, you know, not like people of the desert have their traditions, people of the mountains, each has their own, you know, traditions. But I always believe that the river, people who live beside the river are very spiritual people. And they have, you know, and I like the way she's, you know, telling us about her memories and what this river meant to them, and the activities, the traditions. And so I really, really liked it very much. And it's different because it's speaking about, you know, it's recording history. It's recording a history of a family of, you know, they have their own culture, their own traditions, and even language, obviously. So this was really, really interesting for me. AP?
Yeah, it's a beautiful it's a beautiful poem, and it works on a couple of levels, Osama. It works on a history tradition level. It works just because of the beauty of the poem. And it there is something in a poem that tries to achieve a couple of things, and I think this poem
Yes, beautiful. And, you know, I love the different backgrounds. You know, it's something special about us in Soul Asylum that we celebrate diversity. And we have a lot of the different backgrounds. I think our group especially, you know, we have Cal, the leader of our group and the creator of our show. He has Native American blood, Irish blood, American blood in him. So, yeah. And so we have people from all over the world with different cultures and different languages and different traditions. And I think also something special about our show is that we celebrate this, actually, and we even broadcast poetry in all the languages of the world. So, yeah. So she's a new member in our group, and I really loved her poem, and it's worthy of the Gold Award, and it's very special and beautiful, and you know, very close to the heart. The way she there was a story there, there was a history there, there was you know, like spirituality, history, poetry. This poem, as you said, AP, really combines so many things. So yes, it's beautiful. And thank you, Cheyenne, for sharing it with us. And it's absolutely beautiful. We know what? We can end our show. We only have a couple of moments with a poem by Carl himself. All right. It's called Sitting Next to Spirituality. I'm sure he downloaded the SoundCloud. Is it there?
Okay,
AP, Sitting Next to Spirituality. And I think even the title could be this, like the great ending of the show. celebrating, cool. You know, the holy month of Ramadan and the month of poetry. So this, like, even the, I haven't read the poem, but even like the title combines both, sitting next to spirituality, the spirituality of the holy month of Ramadan and the month of poetry, poetry month. So is it downloaded, AB?
Let me just have a quick look. I've just put the link up on the board. So I guess before we play it, because we'll go out with that, we should thank all of the Red today. My thanks to them. And it is downloaded, so I can play it in one tick. My thanks to Murphy for being back with us and for his expert commentary and insights. And, of course, my thanks to yourself for joining us during your celebration. It's always a pleasure, and it's always, and honestly, say I learn something every time we get together.
Yes, thank you, AP, for always being there, for your support, for your friendship, for your expertise, for your poetry, for being a great friend and great host and a great poet, and for everything beautiful you do for us. And thank you, Murphy. I sincerely appreciate your participation. And like AP said, you're a great commentator and a wonderful poet and a real friend. And I love you guys, and happy Ramadan to all Muslims around the world, and happy Poetry Month to all the poets of all poetry and all our listeners. By the way, guys, we have over 4,000 listeners, and this is amazing. My daughter, when I told her, she said, Mom, you can do a revolution. You can start a revolution. I don't know. My daughter is a rebellion, so I don't know. I never thought of it. I'm starting a revolution.
I just want to thank you both as well. You're both wonderful hosts and really the soul of the show. And you just really, present a very, very happy place to spend some time and enjoy poetry. And I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Murphy. Thank you so much. Okay, we can just broadcast the SoundCloud and just leave it to, and we say our goodbyes now to everyone. Goodbye.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. And until then, as I said, for all the billions of people throughout the world who are celebrating it. All the best for National Poetry Month for all the rest of the writers out. And we will finish with Al and we'll see everybody in a couple of weeks. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Summer.
Bye, bye. Bye, Murphy. Bye, AP.
Here we go now.
Turning the face to the other side as the abyss starts to fall endlessly, carelessly into ruthless revenge, withering world deep diving into meandering mirrors. Billowing bouquets of spring delving deep into ugliness as brought decaying dust, arid ashes of crackling cribs, broken wings fluttering helplessly, all those strangling creatures we've invented, seated from death before us. We are reminded of sweet salted oceans, suspended spirits to rescue wandering ghosts, rambling into abandon. We turn trembling leaves into spiraling pirouettes, lemon into lemonade. I walked on the banks, kicking tin can banana dots, shaking the sandy shores from my shuffling boots. Sat down under the shades of Baltic banks, looking sunset over box house hills with pink of horizon. Spirituality sat beside me on busted, rusty iron gates. I embraced my companion. We thought the same thoughts, bleak, barren, blue, and sad-eyed. Surrounded by steel roots, finding strength, become the tree of rebirth. The water on the river baptized the red sky, sank on top of St. Pauli pearly peaks, hung over like old bombs. We just being ourselves, roomy-eyed streams, humming hermits, singing through mountains, and on the riverbank, tired and wily, looking at sunflowers, there was not a gray shadow against the sky.
This is Soul Asylum with Dr. Blake.